Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Tom. And on this episode of Flash in the Pan, it's silly hats only. We grew up in a world of online animation, and we're digging you out for your consideration, bringing you the tunes that made us who we are. Flash in the Pan. Flash in the Pan. Hi, and welcome to a long-awaited episode of Flash in the Pan. Long-awaited because it's been a while since we've done this, because turns out 2020 is the fucking apocalypse.
Well, welcome back to our podcast brought to you from the increasingly bizarro world of 2020.
Hooray. But we're not going to dwell on that stuff.
No.
You've got your own stuff going on.
Yes.
We'll be fine somehow.
Somehow
and
we'll
so
make
will
it.
You.
Somehow we'll make it work.
Excellent. But yeah, this is a cool podcast, which you might have heard of. If you haven't, then well done for stumbling upon us.
Yeah.
And if you have heard of us, welcome back, Flashketeers. We've missed you.
Yeah.
This is, of course, your premier podcast for the discussion of, you know, like, Flash animation, like old internet animation. It's a little bit messy. It's a little bit wibbly-wobbly, but I think that we have a decent chunk of internet archaeology.
Yeah.
Ready to carve out.
We've already carved out quite a lot already.
We have, but there's so much
there's
more.
There's so much more. We've got to keep digging.
We have. And we're going to ease into it. We're going to get those muscles stretched out again with a couple of favorites. We're going to start off, though, by saying, hey, there has been some cool Flash news. There have been some developments. So, recently there was a very interesting long-form visual article, as in like an article with lots of interesting visual features, by someone by the name of Jonas Richner, which I'm probably saying wrong, at JGamesCH on Twitter, at the website flashgamehistory.com, which is amazing that he got that URL.
Wow, yeah, well done.
which is a really long and in-depth and really interesting exploration of how Flash games, without Flash games and the platform that Flash allowed, the games industry would be completely different.
Yeah.
He starts off talking about Cannibalt, which was basically the first endless runner of the modern age. There's amazing stuff like Way of the Exploding Stick, everything from dress-up games to tower defense games.
I saw Quap.
To Quap, yeah, Quap.
Remember Quap?
Of course, I remember and love
GURP.
Quap. And but it's a really interesting article, very worth checking out. It includes a whole timeline of not just when certain games came out, but also how big they were.
Yeah.
Like how many cumulative plays they got. And it's interesting to see maybe some of the most influential ones and maybe didn't get that much play, or ones that were really, really popular that are kind of forgotten. Things like The Impossible Quiz.
I remember The Possible Quiz.
Yeah, but you didn't until just now.
No, if you'd said to me, remember The Impossible Quiz, I'd be like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I played it.
Well screw me.
This is really, I like the way
this is
illustrated.
It is, it's very interesting. And as an interesting companion piece, I also want to recommend, and these will be linked in the show notes, I also want to recommend a very good Twitter thread by Natalie Lawhead at Alien Melon. Again, I'm probably saying that wrong, in which she talks about women's role in Flash creation, development, and how rarely they get their dues at all. How rarely women in Flash are talked about, how rarely the innovations necessary, especially from the technical side, are actually given appropriate credit and that kind of thing. So I will be linking that as well, because she makes some really good points and has some pretty eye-opening stuff.
Unsurprising, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
weren't women like instrumental in building like
most tech?
Yeah, most tech. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting as we, you know, and it's important as a podcast that is all about kind of nostalgia and so on, that it is important to remember and to seek out a lot of names and a lot of projects that weren't either weren't remembered or were written out.
Hmm.
Which is
criminal.
Kinda, yeah. And I know, and it's kind of difficult for us from the perspective we have on the past, where so much of the history of the games and the cartoons that we talk about is written with this, you know, very white, very male creative idea in mind. You know, the vast majority of the people we've talked about have been white dudes.
Yeah.
And on the occasion, it has been
women. They've been people that were horribly harassed.
That's been a thing. And we should do better. We will do better, or at least try.
We've got to try. I mean, the problem is we come at it from the standpoint a lot of times of what was it that was popular, and
or at least what we remember being popular.
What do we remember? And unfortunately, it just happens that a lot of that was made by
guys,
white dudes.
Yeah,
and there's not much we can do about it. I mean, obviously, we have had instances where things were created by women that were like widely popular, but then the women creating it were basically bullied into ceasing and desisting.
Yeah, which is garbage.
It is garbage.
Yeah, and you know, that's why we include those parts of the stories. That's why we try not to shy away from, hey, by the way, in this creator's story, there's some bad stuff.
I mean, it's history, and history is always messy. It's never squeaky clean.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, you know, you as listeners, as Flashketeers, will help hold us to account in that.
Yes.
You know, like when you give us recommendations, like most of the stuff we've talked about has been from your recommendations. Like, please do let us know of people that have been forgotten or have been written out, because you know that, because sometimes they can be hard to find if you're not looking in the right places. It feels weird to go from that to talking about like the very kind of frivolous and silly cartoons that we're about to talk about, especially because we're starting with very established names. But
that's the nature of the beast,
kind of. Yeah, but no, we do want more. We do want to hear like more recommendations. Like, tell us about like cool things, cool animations made by women, by creators of color, all that kind of stuff. Because
even if it's wildly obscure, just send it.
Yeah, no, there is some amazing and wildly obscure stuff, and we do have some other stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah.
There's one creator in particular that I want to talk about, though I'm really not sure how.
Well, we can give it a shot, which
we will explore as and when.
Yeah,
yeah. Thank you for your patience with us and for being part of this weird and cool project that we've been doing. This is something that kind of got me thinking about like our place in things. Like, we got some beautiful, really beautiful fan art. We retweeted it to the Flash in the Pan Twitter account by Kuth or KTH77, who made us not just a little piece of fan art, but like a fan animation, an actual Flash animation of our logo with our faces there, and it's so
all
sweet.
Things come full circle.
It's very sweet. I can't stop grinning about
it's
it.
It's so good. Yeah, big shout out to KTH-77
Woo!
Repository at 77_KTH on Twitter if you want to check them out and give them a follow.
Yeah, they're a cool artist. They don't have many followers. Maybe we can change that. That's the interesting news stuff. It's not completely the interesting stuff.
I was going to say, is there not something else?
No, there are a couple of other things. So in other Flash news, there is a new browser. A new open source web browser called WaterFox, as opposed to Firefox,
right,
which is naturally Flash compatible. Yeah, she's got a Flash player built in.
Is it? Is it Mozilla supported, or is that?
It's not a Mozilla thing. It's like a different project.
Okay, right.
Which is an open source web browser. There's a motorbike outside. and it's kind of like, it's similar to how Firefox kind of used to be.
Yeah.
In that it's one of these fully customizable browsers.
I remember when Firefox was the cool one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
like the cool rebel, and everyone wanted it.
That's a whole different conversation about browser.
That's a different
homogeneity.
Podcast.
It is a different podcast. If you have opinions about browsers, please do email in.
Yeah.
So yeah, WaterFox might be worth checking out if you're in the mood for some experimental web browsing software
that's compatible with Flash. Yeah, because Chrome and all the other ones are just
killing it,
nixing it.
And the death of Flash, the upcoming death of Flash, has influenced someone very special. So there's a Japanese developer called King, who is the creator of a game called Owata from 2005, which we should probably cover in detail in future.
Yeah.
Because this was the game. It's a notoriously hard and difficult and trollish platforming game.
I see the phrase, I want to be the guy.
That heavily inspired such Western cult classics as I Want to Be the Guy. King only made the one game, Owata. However, in recognition of the upcoming death of Flash support, they've made Owata 2.
Oh, shit.
which I've played a bit of. It is viciously hard.
Nice.
again, I'll link to that on the on the site. King said that it's the first and last new Flash game he's making.
Did I see a shout out from Toby Fox underneath there? Yes.
I believe so. Yes. And yeah, it's got some adorable old school.
Oh my god, I love it!
Japanese ASCII artwork as well.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It really is.
Goodbye, Flash World.
It really is, and I'm also going to be linking to a full translated playthrough that a friend of mine completed recently.
Okay.
Shout out, Jewel! You're a cool gamer.
All right. Yeah.
So that is all of the cool Flash news. And I think it's time to get into some cartoons.
I think it's time to do the thing we usually do now that we've had the broadcast.
Yeah, we've had the serious chat, we've had some news chat. Now it's time for some toon chat.
Let's do it.
As always, you can find all the cartoons we talk about today and watch along with us, or you can find all our previous episodes at our website, which is flashinthepancast.com. And we're going to be starting off with a couple of Homestar Runners. It's going to be a couple of strong bad emails because they're good. There are loads of them. They're pretty short. And you know what? If you haven't seen these, you'll probably enjoy them.
It's a nice little treat for ourselves.
Yeah.
We've been good.
These two are actually thematically linked.
Uh-huh.
Part one is strong bad email number 80, Stunt Double,
which
we will be following with number 106, Dangeresque 3.
Oh, hell yes.
Welcome to Oblivion, Danger Skew!
It's what I like to call a broken neck.
I won't watch you die, Dangeresque.
Don't worry, cutesy buttons. Tonight, dying's not on the menu. So I'm gonna have to jump!
Oh.
Sounds pretty dangerous.
No? Sounds Dangeresque. Okay, you can all return from the edge of your seats.
That was the hottest action film of the summer.
Ah, Strong Bad Email never fails to, never lets me down.
No,
that's what I was going to say. Never lets me, never disappoints me.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It is, it's... It's really fun. This is just an easy episode, folks.
Yeah.
This is the Dangeresque saga, if you like, is one of the most enduring Homestar memories I have.
Yeah, same.
It starts like most of these tunes, it just starts with some random Homestar Runner fans email. and that sparks this creative chain of weird decisions and creativity. You know, a creative chain of creativity. That's the best kind.
You know, it always... I mean, it shouldn't, but it always surprises me when a spelling error shows up in one of these emails to Strongbad.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are someone emailing Strongbad...
You know that he will make fun of your spelling and grammar.
You made a mistake. They're going to make fun of you. Double, triple check to make sure there was nothing in there. Although, I think it was meant to be Lewis... In Lewis's email, he was
Was Lewis, Louise,
Louis, Louise,
Lucy.
Lucy, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, one of the very first things that Strongbad promises is that if you send him an email, he will make fun of you.
I will make fun of you. Yeah. That was email one.
Yes, fair enough. So yeah, we watched Stunt Double and Dangerous 3. Stunt Double is the smaller one, but mm-hmm. it's good.
It's where one of the Homestar Run Alliance that I continue to quote to this day,
which is
I'm gonna have to jump.
Yeah, which it turns out is Dangerous's catchphrase. Yeah. Dangerous being this sort of this Magnum PI slash Lethal Weapon slash Rush Hour, like
it's all of them rolled into one.
It's all of them rolled into one. Yeah, it's where do we even start? Let's just start with what Dangeresque is for. In universe, Dangeresque is a no budget homemade movie project that Strongbad and his friends and family star in.
It is less than no budget.
Yes. It reminds me a lot of home movies.
Yeah.
The series Home Movies, mm-hmm. which, you know, was coming out around the same time. But it's kind of a greatest hits of jokes about really bad homemade films. Like, everything's made of cardboard. instead of being able to shoot Strongmad in silhouette, they just paint him black. From head to toe.
That always gets me. It's like he just cast a light behind him.
Yeah.
He covered him in black paint instead.
Yeah. You know, like they're climbing a building, like in the classic, you know, in classic adventure serials, but obviously it's just the camera tilted
to the side. Because
Homestar loses his glasses.
And they fall on the, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of these are jokes you've seen 100 times in 100 different things.
But they just do them all.
Yeah, they do them all, and they all work, because one of the best things about Strongbad's delusions of grandeur and flights of fancy is that despite wanting to appear aloof and snarky and above it all, he just takes these things very seriously.
He deeply cares about everything he does.
Yeah.
No matter how much he tries to convince you he doesn't care, he really cares.
Which makes the Dangerous project so good.
Yeah.
Because everyone in the project is taking it very seriously. They're all, you know, acting their heart out for what it's worth.
Except for Strongsad.
Except for Strongsad, who is just basically press ganged into it.
Especially in the next one, he's like, I'm not going to be in your movie, and they just take his sandwich.
Yeah, it just immediately cuts to Strongsad looking sad, and Strongbad has stolen his sandwich.
He gets credited as
El Dumpo.
El Dumpo, yeah.
and within the film is just called Hot Tub.
Oh, yeah.
Hot Tub bracket passes by.
El Dumpo.
Yeah. It's great. You've got your bad jump cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your really, really bad editing.
The coach.
Coach
Z. He's like, is it now? I was like, yes, go now. And then at the end of the, did I do that right?
I like that Coach Z is cast as the one ethnic character.
That raises a lot of questions.
In that he is wearing both a turban and a fez. it's great because, like, you know, it's all of these stupid action slash cop movie cliches from, like, the 70s, 80s
yeah.
that are and by doing them in such a drastically incompetent style. Mm. You know, like this isn't like Police Squad where it's, you know, it's jokey and bad.
Yeah, it knows what it's doing.
Like this is like the kindergarten version of Police Squad, you know?
I would so watch that. I watched that 100 times.
Yeah. It's really fun. All of the sound effects are made by Strong Bad's face.
Yep. He sings the theme tune.
He sings the theme tune, does the special effects, kind of. Like they don't even have makeup to put on Strong Mad's face, so they just attach post-its with a bullet hole and a scar. it's great. Other highlights. What would you say, like, sticks out to you most as a danger-esque moment that is relevant to your life?
The one thing that sticks out where I look at it and go, oh, that's where I picked up that particular, like, comic trait, is where they refer to danger-esque 2 as it's not danger-esque 1.
Yes.
Which is something where whenever I would, like, have to give a joke name to something,
uh-huh,
that's the kind of joke name I would give things.
Yeah. And then the second one, the first one is called Danger-esque 2.
And there are 2 Danger-esque.
Yeah.
But 2 is spelled T-double-O.
Yeah, because he's Danger-esque 2.
Yeah.
And it's the most generic buddy cop thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, like, you know, like they're finishing each other's sentences.
Yeah.
Like, there's a rivalry question mark, not really.
Let's get one thing straight. I work alone, except for when I work with Ronaldo, which is all the time.
Yeah.
Which is, again, something that happens in, like, all of these cop movie things. Yeah, the cop says, I only work alone, except he always works for the police force.
Yeah.
So he doesn't work alone. It's impossible.
Yeah. So obviously, this reminded me of home movies. It also reminded me a lot of the seminal artistic masterpiece that is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. We've talked about Garth Marenghi's Dark Place on here before.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
I'm certain. Which, if you haven't seen it, is 6 episodes of some of the best, worst television you'll ever experience.
Yeah, if you haven't seen, somehow, if you're listening to us and have not experienced Garth Marenghi's Dark Place,
it's all on YouTube.
Please do that, because I didn't see it until 2014, 2015. And my eyes were opened.
It's great. And Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which does kind of the same thing. It actually came out just a few months after Stunt Double and a few months before Dangerous 3.
Interesting.
Maybe Brothers Chaps saw it, like, you know, maybe they didn't. But
I think it's the kind of thing they would watch.
Yeah, but they come from a very similar, they have a very similar DNA in terms of the ways that they relish the wonders of bad filmmaking. At this point, especially in, like, the Brothers Chaps saga, like, Homestar Runner and Strong Bad in particular have properly taken off.
Yeah.
Like, this is late 2003 to mid-2004.
This is the compy era.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, this is where, you know, like, they're selling merch by the boatload. Mm-hmm. They've got new cartoons coming out left and right. It would only be, like, 3-4 years before, like, Strong Bad would have a game.
A game. Available to buy from Nintendo.
Yeah, like Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. Which, the fourth chapter of which is the film Danger-esque 3.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, they're riding high on the hog in terms of their media production. And, like, why wouldn't they just go all out? Like, Danger-esque 3, the spemale, that is.
Yeah.
Is, like, a full 5 minute. Like,
yeah, it's long.
It's it's long, but, like, it's just got really good pacing. The humor is great. Apparently, according to the director's commentary on the Strong Bad email DVD, they were originally going to call him just Danger Man, but Danger Man was already taken because it was a 60s series with Patrick McGoohan.
I was going to say, what obscure, like, 1960s hero had already had someone taken that name?
I know, But I do like the fact that Danger Man already existed as the most generic possible action star.
Well, it was the 1960s.
It was.
I mean, Batman.
Yeah, okay, at least...
You know,
Batman's from the 30s, though.
But that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking, oh no, he's trapped. What should we call it? The Prisoner. The Dangerous Shorts, they're really fun.
Yeah.
We tick all the buttons. We got Marzipan playing the expendable, no, not expendable, but the personalityless lady romantic interest.
That
cutesy
has to be
buttons.
Saved. Yeah.
you know, like, thanks for the serum, boys. Now I won't get kidnapped. The cool high-tech car phone that's just a VCR.
It's all VCR. Oh, that joke kills me. The whole VCR player.
It's great.
Mm.
And then, yeah, the... it looks like I'm going to have to jump at the end. I like that all of the characters are explicitly named.
Mm.
It's like the Danger-esque series is a film series that absolutely does not want you to have to think at any point.
No.
It is, Perducci's in Istanbul. Istanbul, of course. Next shot, they're just standing in a field.
The cheat's wearing a
sandwich board that says Istanbul. The bad guy's called Perducci. Cut to the king of town, who is playing Perducci, wearing a little name tag that says, "Hello, my name is Perducci."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's adorable. And although, honestly, the thing from these two females, which has always stuck with me the most, even more than the catchphrases, even more than the wonderful outro song, "It'll Be All Right for Tonight," is at the very start of Stunt Double, where the person emailing in describes Louis/Louise/Lucy describes himself as a long time watcher, first time writer. And Twitch strong matters, an LTW, FTW. And every single time I am watching something or listening to something or reading something that includes letters from the audience.
First time, long time listener, first time writer.
LTW, FTW.
FTW, yeah. I know that's part of what makes strong matters so great, because you can literally never predict where he's going to, like,
fuck up your email.
Yeah, he's gonna poke fun at you.
Yeah, it's very creative.
Another thing that's always stuck with me, that's not in the actual Danger-esque proper, from the Danger-esque, the introduction, the actual email, is when the email asks when Danger-esque 3 is coming out.
Yeah.
And it says it's coming along nicely.
Yeah, it's great. as per usual, we generally do the flash there isn't really one. No, we've talked about the Brothers Chaps a lot. There are no major updates since the last time we talked. We do have some random comments from the YouTube, Mr. Bear said 4 years ago, "It's taken me a while, but I finally realized that Danger-esque's nunchuck gun doesn't have a trigger."
Good, as it should be.
I know, right?
But Lee Moon from 5 years ago, and they said, "Fun fact, I'm living on Istanbul."
Excellent,
thank you.
Kurt Ritchie, only 1 year ago, said, "I always come back to this around Christmas time because that's when I first found it. It has now become a holiday tradition to check out the Danger-esque videos."
Good.
I think that's good.
That's a good Christmas tradition.
Yeah, it's kind of like how they always used to show The Great Escape on telly at Christmas in the UK, apparently.
Why did they do that?
I don't know.
It's not a Christmas movie.
No, but it's maybe because it's just a good, solid action film that's fairly family-friendly.
I mean, it's got the iconic bouncing the ball off of the wall scene.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's where it comes from.
And finally, we got a Danielle, only 7 months ago, who kind of sums it up, where Danielle says, this does remind me of the movies that were made by the one kid you knew was going to end up being a director. But you're all 13 and making movies on his dad's camera, and it was edited in 2 hours on his dad's computer.
Yep.
And yeah, it's great. It's
accurate.
It's the wonderful, ultimate amateur project that is treated like a masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece.
It's wonderful.
In its own way.
It makes me very, very happy. Okay, and our next cartoon is going to be the 2005 classic Fetz Vet.
Kuzumo Sespa in my DeLorean. War's over, I'm a peacetime Mandalorian. Historian stump, Star Wars historians. Deep in debate, but they play at Benegans. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate. First and second defense, I won't hesitate. Got a job to do when Darth the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates. I don't give a fuck, I'm after Solo. For all I care, he could be hiding at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good. When a Jawa's run a shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked.
Well, that was short and sweet.
Dreadful.
Not a fan, are you?
Not anymore.
Cards on the table.
Not anymore. No.
Interesting. So, so Fetz Vet is a partial music video for
For
the MC Chris song.
It's like a 3 minute song cut down to one.
Yeah, you get a verse and a chorus. MC Chris, who in the mid-2000s was one of the big names of nerdcore rap.
Yeah, we'll go over MC Chris.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And this is it's basically just the Star Wars gangster rap animation style.
Yeah.
But a little rougher around the edges. Mm. Much rougher around the edges. Mm. You want to talk about the animation?
Well, the animation is very rudimentary.
Okay.
It's quite stiff.
It is a bit, yeah. You get the sense that all of these figures have been traced from like production stills and official artwork or even and that kind of stuff. You know, they've drawn over them and then they've rigged them to with flashes. Damn, I can't remember. And they've read them to sort of like vaguely dance and clap in time and that kind of stuff.
Very vaguely in time.
Yeah, I do like that. You kind of get the red versus blue thing with Boba Fett's head, because like since he's wearing a mask, how do you know he's speaking? Yeah. And the way you know he's speaking is by his head violently gyrate and just quiver and occasionally swell and shrink.
The complete kind of unrelated, but like in Red versus Blue, as the series went on, they toned that down.
They did, and I think it lost us. It lost some of the magic.
Do you think? You know what? And like then it was 3D animated, and it was like, wait, what even is this anymore? It's not Halo Machinery. You're just making a show, and then they just did Ruby.
Yeah,
and Red versus Blue is still going, by the way.
You remind me of that like every few months, and I'm like, oh yeah.
Every time I remember, I'm like, I can't believe it.
It's what put those guys on the map.
It's true. I mean, to me, it's like what exists is like the first 5 series, and that's it.
Yeah,
that was the story.
Although, like, Ruby is extremely popular.
Ruby is incredibly. I don't
like to the point where, and we'll get back to Fetz Vet in a second. But like, I didn't realize how big Ruby was because I watched a few episodes, didn't really get into it, and just kind of left it.
Yeah.
In the big budget Hollywood Stephen King adaptation, Doctor Sleep, the young girl in Doctor Sleep has a Ruby poster in her bedroom.
Yeah, it's
like, honestly, that's wild to me.
It's honestly like, it's bewildering to me because I really tried to like Ruby because I liked Red versus Blue.
Yeah.
And some of the other stuff Rooster Teeth did. And I just can't get on with Ruby because it just isn't well made. Or well written.
If you're a fan of Ruby, please write in to flashinthepancast@gmail.com.
Okay, but some of the writing is decent, but the 3D animation sort of is really...
Oh. Is it one of the things where, like, it starts kind of rough and then they find a groove?
It's all over the place.
Hmm, okay. Anyway, I wonder why we're avoiding talking about Fett's Vet. I suppose there's not that much to talk about. Like, it's, you know, for what it is, it's well-synchronized to the music. It's... they kind of cheat a bit with just screenshots from the film scrolling past.
Yeah. I mean, I'm bringing up Fett's Vet because for the longest time, people talk about the Star Wars gangster app, and I was like, oh yeah, I know what that is. I thought it was this.
Oh!
For a really, really long time, I thought this was the Star Wars gangster app. And then
that's interesting.
Like, no, it's this. That's a different thing. And I was like, oh, okay. But, like, I assumed that Fett's Vet was a Star Wars gangster app for, like, maybe 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. If you didn't listen, way back in episode 37, in our Star Wars special, we talked...
The teachings of Kit Fisto.
Yeah, the teachings of Kit Fisto. We talked at length about the Star Wars gangster app.
We did.
This is, stylistically, it's very simple. It's very, it's very kind of... you know, a lot of corners being cut, but I get it, and like I kind of wish it were longer. I kind of wish it were the whole song.
I'm glad that it isn't the full song, because researching this and kind of going back, because I used to be really into this song.
Sure. Is this our transition?
not just yet. We'll get to it, I promise.
Okay.
I went back and kind of like listened to the full song.
Oh,
again,
dear.
I used to be really into this. We kind of touched on how weird my music taste was when I was a kid. This is another random bit, like bit of music that I burned onto a CD along with the Super Mario Twins and Nickelback Still Tied Up. but it wasn't this version. It was like a weird, like, country rap rock version by somebody called Bad Speller. That's BADDSPELLA. And I went back and I listened to it, and I spent the entire duration of the song, like, with my nose wrinkled going, I had a bad taste in my mouth. It's like, this song's kind of not... This kind of song's kind of gross.
Okay.
I don't like... obviously my music taste evolved and completely changed. There's immediately a fat joke at the beginning.
Yes.
I didn't get it because, like... being British and, 13, I didn't know what Bennigan's was.
Oh right,
whenever he said Bennigan's, like, that just didn't register in my brain. I was like, what is that? What I didn't research Bennigan's. I was just like, what is that? It's just okay. I don't know.
I mean, the full song having some fairly objectionable lyrics, which it does, like, it kind of comes with the territory. Like, even some of the best. Like, you know, braggadocio, some of the best rap songs, especially some of the older ones. Like, there's just some mean stuff in there.
Yeah,
you know?
it's just not necessary.
It's just a bit rude.
It's just a little bit.
Yeah, honestly.
Come on.
Come on now, MC Chris. So that's why you're glad that it's not the full song?
I'm glad it's not the full song, because the full song has got some stuff in it which I...
has not aged well at all.
Oh, no. Really badly. And I don't want to expose our lovely listeners to that. I mean, you feel free to go and hunt out the full song. I would not recommend it.
The full song does appear on the soundtrack to the Kevin Smith film Zack and Miri Make a Porno.
Fuck yeah, you're right. I'd completely forgotten about that. I think that film was initially what reawakened that memory for me. Like, all those years ago, I was like, oh, fuck, I remember listening to that.
Zack and Miri Make a Porno, surprisingly good.
It's pretty good, actually, yeah.
Um, So yeah, what more is there to say about Fett's Vet? I really like the Flash intro. I like
the spinning play button.
The spinning play button is beautiful, but like when you first load it, it's just a really detailed cartoon foot just smashing into you. It's like, yeah, okay, I know what this guy's all about.
He's got attitude.
His animation's gonna kick you in the face.
Certainly does his best.
Turns out that Jordan Ogg does know Majesty.
Whoa. Well, yeah, I mean, we didn't bite him in the face.
Oh, no, you're right.
He tried to kick us in the face.
Yes. So, yeah, I think it's time for a little bit of background info, because I believe that you spent some time looking up some Flash.
Yes, so... Oh, Fett's Vet.
Oh, Fett's Vet.
It was uploaded July 2005.
Yes.
This, at the time when I was first researching this, it had been viewed. It's not got a lot of views. 126,794 at the time.
That has increased by 44.
Okay. yes, it was created by Jordan Ogg, and they joined Newgrounds in 2003. Jordan Ogg only has 6 animations that he made between 2003-2005. Then he came back 11 years later in 2016 to upload The Celebrity Vice Prentice. So, trying to find out anything about this creator is impossible.
Really?
The link to Jordan Ogg Productions turns up a dead .tk domain, which, I mean... That just brings back some special memories.
Yeah.
The old .tk domain.
Anything in the Wayback Machine?
I couldn't even bring up anything on the Wayback Machine.
Oof.
Searching Google for Jordan Ogg just returns search results. I forgot about this. It just returns search results for Air Jordans.
Oh.
Even Googling the Incredible Flash Dummies, which turns up nothing except the book Flash CS3 for Dummies. And some videos for the Incredible Crash Dummies, including the
Angry
Video Game Nerd video for.
Oh that. Yeah.
So I tried to look up. I also tried to look up Billy Schwaggles.
Yes, you get special thanks.
Special thanks. Pro tip: do not do this.
Oh.
Unless you want to go to the extremely adult part of Newgrounds and see a lot of anime titties.
I mean, who doesn't want to see anime titties in these troubled times?
It depends on
anime titties are one of the few certainties we have.
Depending on what kind of mood you're in, don't look up Billy Schwaggles on Newgrounds. All we know about Jordan Ogg, he's now 32.
Okay.
He went to Middle Tennessee State University, and he lives/lived in Brentwood, Tennessee.
Yep.
That's what it says on the Newgrounds
profile.
That's all I know. I couldn't find anything. I did my best.
No, I can tell.
So, the music, MC Chris on
MC Chris! All lowercase, by the way.
Who I...
Like Bell Hooks.
No, not like Bell Hooks. So, I frequently confused MC Lars and MC Chris, the former of which I saw open for Zebrahead in 2007.
Me too, in 2010.
I think we talked about this.
We have.
It was the same, I think. No, we thought it was the same tour.
But it probably wasn't
because mine was definitely like 2007.
Yeah. So yeah, MC Chris.
Or should we call him Christopher Brendan Ward?
Okay.
His real name.
His government name.
He's had a fairly prolific career.
Yes.
He worked in the early aughts for Adult Swim. And he contributed to Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and he had a recurring character in the show called MC Peepence.
Yes, he did.
He was also a contributing writer for Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Whoa!
And he even had a cameo in the episode Baphomet. So he wrote for and is in Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
That's wild.
He resigned from Cartoon Network in 2004. And he went on to work alongside the creators of Metalocalypse.
Brendan Swan.
And created the theme for internet radio show Jane Silent Bob Get Old.
He did.
He did. He did. So, apparently, initially in his career, he rejected the Nerdcore label.
As many of them
didn't
did.
Like it.
Yep.
And he preferred... What he went with instead, he preferred to describe his music as MC Chris music.
Oh, that's absolutely precious.
Although, he has since said he's got no problem with the label now. He's embraced it now.
Well, I better go to iTunes and update all of my tags.
Note, previously referred to as MC Chris Music. This has been amended.
MC Chris Music. That is one of the sweetest things I've ever heard.
Regarding MC Chris and his work, his latest studio album, self-titled MC Chris... The latest studio album was MC Chris Is Good Music in 2018.
Hey, okay, so he's still going strong?
He's still going.
Yeah, and has his music...
No idea.
Okay, cool.
Judging from the song titles, no.
Right, okay.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I didn't take the time to sit down and listen. Maybe I should have, but I didn't.
Well, that's okay. Maybe that can be your homework between this episode and the next one.
My homework?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's fine. That's okay.
I don't want to ruin my Spotify recommended.
Ruin or improve?
Utterly destroy the algorithm.
I mean, maybe...
Basically, you listened to Nerdcore one time.
Maybe this is what will finally get Spotify to self-destruct. If, like, you know, you put on the latest Deftones album, mm-hmm. and then just take a hard swerve into MC Chris.
Just jerk the wheel as hard as physically fucking possible.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so yeah, Jordan Ogg, kind of an unknown quantity. Maybe we'll cover some more of their stuff in the future. Maybe we'll learn some more about them.
Maybe
we'll. I do think it's wild that they took an 11-year break in making Flash animations, at least for Newgrounds.
I mean, it's
and
not...
then came back with a political satire video from 2016.
But it's not the first time we've seen something like that before.
No, that's true. That's true. We've seen some hiatuses.
It's a weird phenomenon where, like, creators disappear and then come back in, like, you know, the 2010s
era, yeah.
And, like, upload something. It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's very strange. Next off, and finally...
What about the comments?
We have some comments.
We do have...
That was a good save, me.
We have the comments for Fed's Vet.
The first comment we have is from June 29th, 2007, by Penor. Or Penor.
It's probably not.
By Penor, who said, "Sad. You should have done the whole song, you lazy animator. I liked it, and then it stopped, and I was sad."
Then Jordan Ogg responds,
"Laziness is an art in itself."
Mood.
Big mood.
Big fucking mood. we got DX2, December 4th, 2005. They said, "It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. But he doesn't sound like Fett at all. I'll give it a 6. 3 stars.
Yeah. Well, either that's 6 out of 10. 3 stars. That actually works.
But did we know what Boba Fett sounded well?
Very brief. Yes, yeah, we did. He has a very small number of lines in the Star Wars films.
It would be really cool to get, you know, some kind of like rap verse out of the voice actor that played, well, the actor that played Boba Fett.
Oh,
it's not gonna happen.
No, I don't think so. Spitfire 100. Said in October of 2006, said WTF. That is one of the most off-topic Star Wars spoofs I have ever seen. I gave it a good score because it apparently takes sides with Chevy. Damn Fords. I love...
Sure, why not?
Look, car culture is serious business to those who are into it. And that can translate even to places like Newgrounds.
I can just see Spitfire 100 literally shaking his fist as he types Dan Ford.
Damn Ford!
Damn Ford!
And finally...
Matt the Paranoid Cat. July 19th, 2005. He says, "That shit was tight! I enjoyed that Boba Fett is a real gangster. Maybe you should join 50 Cent a GGGGG unit. LOL. Seriously, great fucking job, man.
Except he didn't say 50 Cent. He said 50 Cent.
Oh, he did say 50 Cent. Join 50 Cent.
GGGGG unit. Damn, 2005 was a weird time.
It was. This was before he went looking for his skull. Simpler time.
Do you remember the days before Fiddy had a skull?
They were. They,
his head was really soft.
I was worse off for it.
This is a reference to seminal video game experience 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
Yes, I'm only thinking about the Fiddy Zone now.
The Fiddy Zone is somewhere that we all strive to get to.
It lives within us all.
Okay, we're going to finish off with a very much requested video here, which kind of. It's not Flash, but it's definitely part of the online animation canon.
Yeah.
Because this got extremely big.
Hugely.
On places like Albino Black Sheep. Because we are going to be watching Don Hertzfeldt's Oscar-nominated short film, Rejected.
Still fantastic.
It's so good. It's interesting. We've seen three very different approaches to filmmaking, if you like, and to comedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this so Rejected Cartoons was released in 2000. Mm. So it's one of the earlier ones we talked about.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting coming to it this late in the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we've seen so many things that it clearly influenced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm glad that we've done that because it allows us to kind of go back to the root of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, without this, there's no Astiff movie.
There's no Laser Collection.
There's no Laser Collection. There's
there's no demented cartoon movie.
There's no demented cartoon movie.
There's
my goodness.
There's no Orphan House.
Probably not. No, but like this, this has tentacles attached to a pig. But like this has tentacles that stretch two decades at this point, and it's still really good. I think
it's still fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. You wanna talk about the plot?
Oof. Okay. I mean, so the plot,
or at least the premise.
The premise is that these rejected cartoons are initially created for commercial use,
ad campaigns,
public broadcast. But they're all so weird and disturbing that they're all obviously rejected.
Yeah,
and as the film progresses, the animator and subsequently the animations like fall apart.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's said that title card halfway through that, like, you know, after being dejected by, you know, none of his cartoons making the cut, the animator just continues a downward spiral into stagnation and chaos, and without anything to anchor it the animations start to collapse in on themselves. And
which
so,
is literally
They literally do. It's kind of amazing.
It's so well done.
Because we get the... Because we get these quick, silly, grotesque little skits.
They're horrible.
Which are often really unpleasant.
They're really nasty.
Yeah. You know, like, and the unpleasantness, like, becomes much funnier in the context of, oh yeah, these were made for the Family Learning Channel. And then after the last batch of rejected commercial cartoons, the cartoon characters are shown just existing as their world starts to collapse around them in increasingly violent and genuinely frightening ways.
Yeah.
Like, I remember back when I first saw this when I was like 12, 13, like seeing like the sudden cut to just, you know, black and white torn up paper and like this oppressive rushing wind noise and creaking. It's like fucking Eraserhead.
A little bit.
It does get very David Lynch toward the end. Mm. You know, these characters trapped in an artificial world that is crumbling around them. And it's only when it's too late that they realize that they need to escape. You know?
Yeah.
It's really intense.
It's really oppressive.
It is oppressive, I think, is the right word for it. And it's oppression born from the oppression of a corporate mandate. Which I think is you know, it's okay, it's kind of a cliche, okay, you know, like you know, selling out, as it were.
But,
causes the art to suffer, but in this case it causes the actual art to suffer.
The thing is, when you work in a field like animation, you don't really have a choice. Like, if you're an animator and somebody pushes a commercial thing under your nose, you are gonna fucking jump on that and do it.
Yeah,
you're not gonna fuck about. You're gonna just do it.
Yeah, we've talked about creators who did go on to do advertising and that kind of thing. And it's interesting that, you know, like, this is like way at the start of Don Herzog's career.
Yeah,
so it's interesting that he's already carving out a niche in which he rejects the idea that he could flourish in that environment at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is some really heavy chat for a cartoon that starts off being about a banana and a man whose spoon is too big.
That first bit, like, that always makes remember, like, that is... that's how I learned about this cartoon. I didn't see it until 2006.
All right.
Because it was after I went to college... And a friend of mine just one day just turned to me and said, "My spoon is too big." And I was like, "What?
Did they do the voice?"
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They did, they did the voice and they did that. "Hi, I'm a banana."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What are you?" He's like, "Have you not seen?" And I was like, "What? No, I have no idea what." He was "Okay."
Wow.
He's like, "Come here, sit down, watch this." And I'll always remember like that just being like, "Whoa, what the fuck?" The way that I viewed that was like in a very public space.
Oh wow, okay.
I was watching that like, and a bunch of other people like doing work like around me, and I'm just sat there like, "What the fuck?"
It's interesting because about more than half of the lines from this became. Just in jokes all over the place.
They became mimetic.
Yeah, completely mimetic. Like, the entire thing became mimetic. Like, this was spread far and wide. This was a huge hit on Albino Black Sheep. To the point where... So Albino Black Sheep, back in the day, it's the site background was a collage of text, and the text was all clips or lines taken from big name Flash cartoons, and that wall of text included the lines "My spoon's too big" and "I am a banana." So like this was, you know, this was not only an important formative experience for a lot of creators, but also like this was literally the background against which a lot of Flash creators and a lot of writers online were producing their own stuff.
It was the background, figuratively and literally.
And I am really happy that it holds up so well. It is ridiculously unpleasantly violent, but like not in a grisly way so much as a because the characters are, you know, they're
stick people.
Yeah, they're just stick people. But then you contrast that with like the very fluid animation making the actual violence feel really quite visceral.
Very unsettling, yeah.
Like this is a level of stick person violence that, you know, countless animators would strive for.
Mm.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just completely random.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is one of the texts of LOL random.
Yes, this is it.
Like two people standing there, like there's just a growth appears from a person's head, and grows a face and starts babbling, and the other person just goes, "Fuck." And then
he's smiling when he says it as well. Like,
yeah. And then a pig with tentacles flies past, and there's the sound of an airline, and it cuts to the Family Learning Channel logo.
It's
really good. It's a really good absurdist piece that actually has a message, which is nice. It's interesting to think about stuff that came since, which was heavily inspired by it.
Yeah,
that tried to go for the same kind of thing and with varying levels of success.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a lot of those cases, like, they kind of ended up taking the formula and making it their own.
Yeah. Which is cool. Yeah. This is kind of like the sort of... So you know how a lot of people, when they first start out drawing...
Yeah.
Draw in a style that is very derivative of, say, anime or comic books or that kind of thing, and then they grow into their own style.
Mm.
I think that the influence of Rejected has been so obvious that a lot of people who have blossomed into all sorts of interesting dimensions, if you follow their work back far enough, you can see the seeds that Don Hertzfeldt's work planted.
Yeah, I mean, like Rejected is kind of like the blueprint for the way that humor evolved over like the last 20 years, in a way. Online, definitely.
Oh, definitely online. Yeah, because you've got the randomness, you've got the silliness, and you've got the ultra violence.
Yeah, you've just got the random violence, and then like at the end, it's all meaningless.
It's absurdist in like the sort of the literal Albert Camus sense of it being kind of almost about embracing the utter meaninglessness of it all. I don't know if that's true, because the character with the bunny ears at the end is trying to escape. All the characters are trying to escape the actual destruction of their world.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe it's something else going on. There's definitely an absurdist streak in there, obviously. Yeah. But you know, what does the desire to escape mean?
The whole thing is framed around like Don Hertzfeldt's understanding that in order to succeed as an artist, you have to bend to corporate. But obviously, he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
And so there's fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's kind of Don Hertzfeldt's basically, like, literally banging on the other side of the screen going, "Let me the fuck out."
Kind of, yeah. No, I can definitely see that. And the thing is, like, since the characters are so simple, you can impose a lot of things onto them. You can project a lot onto them. Except maybe the guy whose anus is bleeding. Like,
his anus is bleeding.
That's pretty cut and dry. Well, not dry.
For the love of God and all that is holy, my anus is bleeding.
Yeah, and yeah, but yeah, even there, you know, like he's in clearly in pain, in distress, drowning in blood, while all of the rest of his cloud people kin
are
singing and dancing.
Cheering.
Everybody dance.
I mean, they're only doing what they were told.
Yeah,
it's just it's just this. This is a horrible kind of unsettling stuff. Kind of set. It is a masterful use of juxtaposition, like that scene and the scene where, like, oh look, Billy's taking his first steps and he fucking falls down the stairs and everyone's like applauding and cheering in the background.
Yeah,
and it is. Yeah,
this is the kind of humor that, you know, like, platforms like Adult Swim would trade in for years and years.
Massively,
and
years.
And yeah, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a comedy writer or animator that had not in some way, you know, of our generation or maybe a bit older, who hadn't in some way been influenced by this or by its many imitators.
You know, you mentioned Adult Swim. I can kind of see this being aired on Adult Swim, but like around like the kind of like 2 a.m. 3 a.m.
Oh yeah, the infomercial stuff, like the Alan Resnick. And...
Yeah, all these like this house has people in it. And going on a bear hunt, too many cooks, and all that stuff. Like, I can see them putting this on really early, late night morning, just to fuck people up. Like, just to fuck people. I would too.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I honestly don't have anything bad to say about it. A couple of the skits might go on a bit long, but I think that adds to the general sense of creeping dread.
I mean, that may even be intentional. It's obviously trying to upset and unsettle. So
yes, definitely, and I think it works. Like, you know, when I was young, watching this for the first time, like, I was kind of upset.
I think my reaction to it was just like, "What the fuck did I just watch?"
Yeah.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And I kind of want to watch it again.
I know, right? I think it's time for a little bit of a flash. So yeah, Rejection Cartoons is made by Don Hertzfeldt, who has become, whose work has only increased in ambition and clarity, I think. He has been animating pretty solidly for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his stuff is occasionally available on Netflix. Occasionally it's just available on Blu-ray. And I do recommend, honestly, he's like really worth buying stuff from.
Absolutely.
Because so he's had work such as It's a Beautiful Day, which is an emotionally very heavily affecting story about...
I couldn't watch that twice.
Yeah, which, you know, about... a man who starts to lose parts of his memory, and again it's rendered in this very simple stick person style, but again Don Hertzfeldt is able to use the medium to kind of lull you into a sense of security before just fucking with you.
Yeah.
Most recently he's been working on World of Tomorrow, which is a trilogy. The third episode will be out soon. A trailer just dropped this month.
Oh wow! Okay.
In which it starts off with a 6-year-old girl, I think she's 6 or like 4, being visited by her future self, who tells her about the world of tomorrow and tries to communicate with herself as a young child.
Right, okay.
And it explores all of these ideas everything from your place, from like your place in the universe, to the idea of progress, to the idea of family, to the idea, it's this huge ambitious scope that only and that scope and that ambition only increases with episode 2. Which, I mean, episode 2 is called The Burden of Other People's Thoughts, you know? And it's just...
Don't I know it?
But it's like genuinely fascinating. A lot of our Flashketeers, a lot of our listeners might recognize the guest intro he did for an episode of The Simpsons.
That's right, yeah.
In which The Simpsons are accelerated into the far future, where the idea of what The Simpsons is and are has been so warped and so filtered through thousands and thousands and thousands of years of iteration that they are barely even recognizable as themselves. Which is also a really fucking brutal commentary on what The Simpsons has become.
I am surprised they let that go to air.
Kinda, yeah.
I remember what someone was like, you gotta watch this couch gag. I was like, really? The Simpsons? Like, that's a recent Simpsons thing. He's like, no. You gotta watch this couch gag. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah,
I cannot believe, like, Fox kind of went like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's great. And he's had, you know, a lot of other minor films, like Watching Grass Grow is really good. And so is the animation. he's still really prolific. He's still working really hard on some really interesting stuff. And I think he's up there with people like David Firth.
Yeah, definitely.
In that they are creators who, you know, got their start doing kind of silly, weird, kind of creepy stuff, and then just expanded into their own beautiful, frightening niche of creativity.
I mean, yeah, they both kind of started in the early aughts doing like kind of short form stuff, and now they've both got feature length award winning films.
I don't know if Umbilical World has won any.
Did
award.
It not?
I can't remember.
I mean, they have both got long form stuff.
Yeah, they've both got really ambitious long form projects. Yeah. And yeah, no, Don Hertzfeldt stuff is really cool. Another thing is like a couple of his other earlier stuff, edited by a woman called Rebecca Moline or Moline,
mm-hmm.
Who, after working in animation throughout the 2000s, ended up as a producer for a lot of like serious drama TV.
Okay.
So we've got the Pan Am TV series, which was like a cult hit back in the day.
All right, yeah.
She also most recently has been working on The Good Doctor, which is all over the place. She worked on Preacher briefly.
Christ.
Yeah, and she's just like this, you know, this jobbing producer who's got a lot of really cool credits.
Well, good for her.
Yeah, a lot of people and a lot of interesting projects have their histories entangled with it, and I think that's fucking rad.
That is, I mean, I think as you said a little bit ago, it is like the seed that just.
Yeah.
Grew and just didn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's just very funny.
It is very funny.
It's so funny.
Like the bit where like I know it's the part where it all starts to get a bit scary, but when they get crushed by the Family Learning Channel logo, that's just fucking inspired.
It's so good. I really like, because some of the cartoons are for Johnson and Mills, Foods.
Yeah.
And at the end of the spots, it's like, you know, foods such as bean lard mulch.
One is like, I'm a consumer whore.
Yeah. like now with more sodium. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So we've got a couple of comments. If you want to start off with Jim.
Okay. Jim says, one of the most influential films of the decade. Swear to God, if certain parts feel forced or fall flat today, it's because you've been watching lesser artists copy them for the last 16 years. The fact that Asdiff movie is more popular and loved than rejected is a crime. No offence, Tom Scar. Lolso random humour has earned the bad reputation it's gotten, but at least its roots are solid.
Yeah, I wonder if Asdiff movie is more popular and loved than rejected. I suppose Asdiff movie rejected was a one-off. Asdiff movie
has been going for a saga for like since like the early aughts.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's safe to say that it is definitely more well known just just because of the sheer quantity,
yeah,
wins out over Rejected, which was now made 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Spencer Gallucci, 2 years ago, said, "I watched this about 10 years ago and loved it, but slowly forgot about it. Now that I've rediscovered it, it's neat to see as an adult. It's nostalgic in an odd way."
Mm,
hey, yeah. Hey, Spencer, that's our turf.
We've got a podcast for you.
Oh yeah, this fucking that's a great username.
Well, Pimpo.
So Pimpo.
Pimpo 2 years ago. The internet sense of humor has never start again. The internet sense of humor has really never not been abstract postmodern dribble, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Kinda.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of comments saying, like, you know, this is where it started. This is the origin. Someone, wow, one of the comments, with a rose, I remember this when I was still in elementary school. Still hilarious.
Whoa,
today.
Jesus.
Goodness me. Yeah.
Talk about age appropriate, fuck.
Yeah. Did I mention this was nominated for an Academy Award for Short Animated Feature?
I mean,
It didn't win.
It should have. but I mean, just having a nomination sometimes is enough.
Yeah, it's wild.
And it fucking deserves it.
Yeah. It's just yeah, it's just really cool.
It's a hell of a thing.
It's a hell of a thing. And I'm really glad we're finally getting to talk about it, and that it has inspired such, you know, some amazing stuff and some pretty wild thoughts.
Yeah.
It's just cool. Yeah, so like that, those are the cartoons.
Those are the cartoons. Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about some pretty wild and varied stuff.
It's been a very, very mixed bag.
It has been a very mixed bag. And speaking of bags,
whoa, that's the kind of thing where you could maybe put letters in.
Whoa,
wow.
Well, we don't have letters, but we do have some emails that you folks have sent in.
It's an electronic mail.
Electronic mail. What will they think of next? Yeah, so we have some lovely emails from you folks. From KTH77. This is the person who made our wonderful Fanimation.
Hello and thank you.
Yeah, hello and thank you. And they said, newer listener, very happy to find a podcast covering a topic so near and dear to my heart. The web animations that inspired me to be an animator. And I have a lot of podcasts to catch up on. You do, actually. We've got
there's like two years
of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I think it may be interesting to take a look at Battle for the Portal,
mm-hmm.
which was, I believe, a big early Newgrounds crossover thing.
Yeah, it's ringing a bell.
Yeah, and they have a couple of other recommendations, and they finish by saying, it really captured my imagination, presenting the biggest players in Newgrounds battling for supremacy. That
it is an interesting premise.
Yeah, no, that would be pretty cool. And yeah. And again, thank you for your lovely fan art. Next up, we had a couple of people email in on our prompts. Do you remember all the way back in the mists of time?
July.
We had a listener prompt, which was we asked you to, in honor of George Washington, who was 20 feet tall.
Weighs a fucking ton.
To write in, tell us about your favorite weird historical figures. And if you want to take this Sam, friend of the show, Sam, wrote in.
Mad Jack Churchill, only man with a confirmed kill in World War II with a longbow, frequently charged with a claymore. And there is a unconfirmed story that post-war, he used to lob his briefcase out of the train before getting off it. When asked by a bystander, he replied that the train went by his house and he couldn't be asked to carry the briefcase home from the station.
That was an absolute power move.
Ah, fuck. You know what? Sometimes you just gotta say, fuck it.
Yeah, this one... So Sam wrote in with a few, including... So this is just a Wikipedia link and the caption, Tarare, French peasant who probably ate a baby.
That probably is doing a lot of work.
It really is. Yeah, let's go through the rest of these. These are all pretty fun.
Yeah.
Do you want to take the next one?
Digby Tatum Water, officer in the British Army during World War II, famously carried an umbrella with him everywhere he went, including combat. He primarily took the umbrella with him as a means of identification because he had trouble remembering passwords and felt that anyone who saw him with it would think that only a bloody fool of an Englishman would carry an umbrella into battle.
Fantastic.
During Operation Market Garden, Digby led a bayonet charge against tanks wearing a bowler hat. He later disabled a German armoured car with his umbrella, incapacitating the driver by shoving the umbrella through the car's observational slit and poking the driver in the eye.
That's some cartoon bullshit right
there.
That is.
That's fucking Looney Tunes.
H.H. Holmes, American gentleman who made a murder hotel in the 19th century, turned it into a maze-like construction filled with traps and horrible murder rooms. Juan Pujol Garcia, a Spaniard that desperately wanted to be a spy during World War II and got rejected by both the UK and the US, so he just started being a spy anyway. His code name was Garbo.
Good.
And finally,
Bert Munro. A Kiwi, that's someone from New Zealand.
It is.
Speed enthusiast who set multiple land speed records in his 60s. In the 60s, on his bike, that was from the 20s. apparently he's very charming, made famous by the movie World's Fastest Indian.
Wow, that's wild. Thank you, Sam, for an amazing cast of characters. What if they were all friends? And went on adventures together.
That's the buddy movie we need to be made.
Great Joe, frenemy of the show, wrote in with the email, persons of historical significance, with a content warning that this might get not work safe.
Oh, okay. Let me sit down properly then. Oh.
Yeah. And Great Joe says, okay, so. The saga nerds really like that one book about Njal and his best bro Gunnar, but nobody talks about its prologue, which follows Hrutur. Okay, so this is mostly a decent guy, comes of age, meets a nice girl named Unur, gets engaged, goes to Norway to meet with kings, as was the style at the time.
Yeah.
While he's on his way, some scouts report to the queen mother, Gunnhilde, that he's hot, so she gets some guys to kidnap him. She's old and directly wields her power over Hrutur, to force him to stay a few weeks, but he's way into that. They do the nasty, and he also helps quell a rebellion for the king.
Okay.
And when he's back from fighting and is doing Gunnhilde again, she asks if he's got a girl back home. He says no, and they get right back to business.
Ooh.
So 2 weeks later, it's been a lot of sex and fighting, and Hrutur is somehow not dead.
Nice.
From either. he's getting the ship ready to head home, and there on the dock is Gunnhilde, asking again if he's got a girl back home. He says no again, and then she goes, I know you're lying. Also, you two will have a lot of trouble doing it. Flash forward to him back home, married to Unur, and she goes off to her dad to ask him to get her a divorce. Turns out the Hrutur has just the biggest dong, like a dick game for weeks, and won't fit. Now, at this... Okay. Now at this point, my Icelandic teacher said that it's clear that Hrutur got cursed by the magical powers instilled by the Queen Mother's royal whatever. But that's never stated outright. What is stated is that they fucked, and it's pretty clear that she had a habit of keeping and seducing men in their 20s. So, wow. Yeah. So, yeah. Great Joe sums up by saying, one of my favourite historical figures is Gunnhilde, Queen Mother of Norway, who lived her best life, suspected of royal dick sorcery by weirdos who happened to have doctorates. She did some genuinely impressive manoeuvring and reforms in the Norwegian court, but this story was also the first I got to know about her.
She certainly did do some impressive manoeuvring by the sounds of it.
Hey, yeah, thank you, Great Joe, for helping us keep the explicit tag on iTunes. That's wild, though. Like,
good lord.
I mean, she was living her best life. Like,
love that. Suspected of royal dick sorcery.
I hope that one day I too can be suspended. finally, Arp.
Arp says, I was a history teacher major in college, so this is like having to choose my favourite children, but Number one, Emperor Norton.
Yes.
First of his name of the United States. Protector of Mexico. A San Francisco resident who declared himself emperor and was overall just such a swell guy that everyone went with it. He even issued his own legal tender, which rumor has it was accepted in nearby shops. Number B, Aimo Kuvnen, a Finnish soldier during World War II. God, it's not World War II.
I mean, World War II was just a weird time,
Jesus,
I suppose.
Christ.
It
what
just broke a lot of
happened?
People.
Well, it was a war, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, the Finnish soldier during World War II, who, after being tuckered out from surviving an ambush by Soviet troops, took 30 doses of army-issued meth. He did perk up for a bit, but then he blacked out and woke up the next day with no supplies or his unit in sight. He then stepped on a landmine, crawled / skied for a week to civilization, only eating pine buds and raw bird he caught with his hands. And when he was finally admitted to hospital, his heart rate was over 200 and he weighed 94 pounds. He died 45 years later. Yes! That's the good shit.
That's amazing. And
finally, number triangle.
This is number Delta. Tarare, who Sam mentioned.
He's turned up again.
Yeah. So Tarare, clearly very popular. Tarare, the ever hungry man, afflicted with a condition no one has ever been able to explain or understand. Tarare was a man who was always hungry and would eat anything, be it actual food or just garbage. He might even have eaten a baby once while he was in hospital.
Here it is again. He might.
He might.
Maybe. Probably.
Look, I want to see a skeleton and...
Proof. Where's the proof?
Where is the proof? Yeah, so that was a wonderful journey through the strangest part, some very strange parts of history.
Now I'm thinking about the guy who ate planes again.
Oh, Monsieur Mange 2.
Yeah.
Monsieur Mange 2, he ate an entire plane.
He's got to be my favourite historical.
He would eat bicycles.
He's got to be my favourite obscure historical figure.
He's great. My favourite will always be Joseph Pujol, uh-huh. Who was a professional farter. This is in like turn of the century France, though he toured all over the place. Basically he was able to take in air as well as expel it from his ass. And he did things like impressions. He would fart tunes. He would do tricks with like blowing air through a hose and that kind of thing.
Holy shit!
Yeah, and like I believe he would start his before the act, he would like give himself like a fancy perfume enema to make sure that no one in the audience was upset by of his farting.
Don't put perfume in there.
Well,
that can't be good.
I mean, you know, it's probably just rose water or something. I don't know. I like that that's the part that you're taking issue with and not the idea that hundreds upon hundreds of people would pay to see a man fart.
Twitch exists.
Yes, Twitch is the Lepetomane.
I rest my case.
Okay. Also, his stage name was Lepetomane, which means fart maniac.
Good. If it had been anything else, I would have been disappointed.
So for next week, there are a couple of things. First of all, in honor of what we were talking about earlier in the episode, like please do send in recommendations for flash cartoons made by people who aren't just white dudes.
If you can find them, please.
Yeah, because we've got blind spots, obvious blind spots,
yep.
And it's really cool to be introduced to new and exciting things.
Yeah.
So yeah, please do that. And also on a more jokey note, in honor of Danger-esque, please write in and tell us about your favorite strange or wonderful action films. You know, we're not talking your Lethal Weapon or your Dirty Harry. No, we want the weird stuff.
We want like Super Cup.
Yes, exactly. So you can send in those emails and emails about anything at all to our wonderful email address. It's all right, I suppose, which is flashinthepancast@gmail.com. You can also find us on the internet.
Whoa.
I know. It's a sad truth.
But it is true.
It is true, yeah. Alex, you're online.
I am.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
For my sins.
Where are you?
Well, I am on twitter.com/DEX01. You can follow me there if you want, and sometimes, maybe, if you're lucky, I might make a tweet.
Ooh.
Maybe.
You can find me at Gertrude Perkins. That's Gertrude, P-R-K-N-S, where you'll often find me making a tweet because it's one of the only ways I know how to cope with life. Oh yeah! Unhealthy.
I mean, that's the way a lot of us have been living.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to say.
Yes.
I've since we recorded last, I've had my EP out.
Oh, that's right. Yes, please plug.
My EP, aptly named "Lock the Doors and Stay Inside," is available on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have a little search on there for Alexander Valentine, you'll find it.
Are you on Bandcamp as well?
And yes, if you go to Bandcamp, alexvalentine.bandcamp.com, it's there along with all my other stuff.
Wonderful. I haven't been making anything worth talking about, so let's just skip over that.
Okay.
As always, you can find us on Twitter at FlashITPancast or FlashItPancast.
Yeah.
You can find our website at flashinthepancast.com, which has all of our previous episodes, all the cartoons we talked about today, and links to stuff that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's everything.
I think that is everything.
Gosh. Okay. So, yeah. Until next time. I've been Tom.
I've been Alex.
And it looks like we're gonna have to jump!
Have a great flash.
Flash in the pan! Flash in the pan!
I'm feeling fat and sassy.
I was wondering when you were going to say that.